This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Well, these days, hip-hop is one of the most listened to genres, and as the music has grown, rappers from every corner of the world have shaped its style, and that includes North Carolina rappers. On this month's installment of Back Channel, we're going to highlight a North Carolina artist who has become a prominent voice in hip-hop. The rapper Rapsody grew up in Snow Hill in eastern North Carolina. Today, she calls the Triangle home. Her new album, Layla's Wisdom, blends hip-hop, funk, and soul and delivers a message about community, self-worth, and creative control. Here's a sample.
Carolina home, boy, you know we keep a stack house. It's power when you know the game. I'm feeling like a champ now. I went to rap. Homie, get out the trap house. I want the power to be able to rap about what I rap about. Black child, God loving textiles. Point blank, decimal. Steph Curry projectile. I saw the goal from 8 miles. Every stone you threw, I picked it up and built a powerhouse. Caught a case. I got murder in my profile. Still billing me. See, that's just the appeal of me. Respect on my name. Why y'all so emotional? Power.
I feel your energy.
That's Power by North Carolina rapper Rapsody, who we will talk with in just a moment. But first, I want to introduce our regular guests on Back Channel, popular culture experts Natalie Bullock Brown and Mark Anthony Neal. Natalie is a professor of film and broadcast media at St. Augustine's University in Raleigh. Welcome back, Natalie.
Thank you, Frank.
Mark Anthony Neal, chair of the Department of African and African American Studies at Duke, an author and the host of the webcast Left of Black. Hello, Mark.
What up, Frank?
How do you feel about this album now, Layla's Wisdom?
It's amazing. I was fortunate enough to hear a version of it in the studio about 2 months ago before it got released. And I sat there enraptured. Just listening to it straight through, you know, one, because it's such a great representation of the best of what hip hop can do. Mm-hmm. It also focuses on, you know, a place of the world where we normally don't think about hip hop. When we talk about hip hop in the South, we think about a certain kind of hip hop. We don't think about North Carolina as the place that's producing artists, right? And then, of course, to have a young woman represent hip-hop and us not have to make the caveat that this is a young woman representing hip-hop or she's representing the best of women in hip-hop. But right. No, she's just straight up representing the best of hip-hop.
Right. Natalie?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more with Mark. And, you know, as a Black woman, I just feel like Rapsody is... you know, representing Black women at the top of her game. I mean, she is comparable to the best of rappers that are out there now. And as Mark said, you don't have to qualify that. I mean, she can hang with Kendrick and Busta. I mean, all these people, Black Thought, all of these amazing rappers who have been around for, you know, however long. I mean, who've been around forever, really. Kendrick, not so long, but of course, Busta and Black Thought have been, and they are so well respected. And she's got them, you know, she's got them hanging with her. And that's because they respect her as well, which speaks to her ability, her lyricism. I mean, she's amazing.
She does hang with them. She was on Kendrick's To Pimp a Butterfly, and she's on our show now. Rapsody, welcome back.
Hey, man. Thank you all for those amazing comments.
love fest.
So how accurate are they, Rapsody? Are you the best? Let's talk about this. Let's talk about this new, I could have you talk about Mark's work. What do you think about his professorial skills?
He's the best of the best.
Yes, he is.
No question.
Yes, he is.
Let's talk about Layla's Wisdom now. A little bit more about that and about the meaning, because Layla's Wisdom is, you're very intentional about that and what it means. Talk about what's going on with this album.
Yeah, Layla was my maternal grandmother, you know, a mother of 14 children, grandmother of 150 great-grandchildren and all. And it was one thing that, you know, she taught us all was to give flowers while we're still present. And, you know, I thought about it, you know, that's what I was raised on. And, you know, one aspect of that is how can I give back through the music? Like, how can I give my flowers? How can I teach self-confidence and self-love and give the wisdom that I learned to whoever's on the receiving end? So, you know, that was a way of giving my flowers. And two, appreciating people while they're here, whether we're talking about, you know, our family members, friends, teachers, or even artists that, you know, we don't appreciate until they're gone and they can't know how much they were loved and respected. And, you know, also because, you know, I'm talking about why I am the woman that I am and why I'm so confident and strong and why I work the way I do is because of, you know, what my grandmother taught my mom and my aunts and what they taught me. I was definitely raised in a village. So, you know, I am the person I am today with a large part as far as a woman because of my grandmother and what she instilled in all the women around me.
Let's hear a little bit from that title track, Layla's Wisdom.
Look, don't worry about anything they told you. Remember what she said about winter and what the cold do. Everything's a season and some things you gotta go through. Believe me, I done seen it all. You're young talking to old you. When haters come around, look them down, tell them we don't owe you. You gonna lose some friends, but those circles are better than the ovals. A black man left the oval. Keep that style, you got soul. The best of the best gon' feel you, sky's the limit, see I told you. You gon' be the difference between McDonald's, Burger King, and Whole Foods. Do your thing and slip through on them, yeah, they ain't gon' have no clue. You won't need no toll booths, they'll pay attention, hope do. They'll ask you for advice, tell them the same thing I told you. Should be a crime to be this flying awesome. And to think that love is all it costs. Feel like Jordan, it's the ball, the pistol toss. I'm the underdog, and gold is what we flossin'. When they told me.
That's a clip of the song Layla's Wisdom, title track from Rhapsody's new album. My guest today, along with Mark Anthony Neal and Natalie Bullock Brown, for another installment of Back Channel. You talk about, and this album, I think, if there's a theme, a lot of it has to do with bringing forward the wisdom, honoring that tradition. And this album also features a sample from Aretha Franklin's song, Young, Gifted, and Black, a reference to the Nina Simone song, To Be Young, Gifted, and Black. Tell me more about that sample and why you chose it for this track.
Man, one, I just love the song. I've always loved it, what it represented. You know, when it comes on and it says, I'm young, gifted, and black, you know, it's very empowering. And so I definitely wanted to start the album off with that. It's something I've been wanting to sample for a long time. So in the moment, I was like, ninth, like, we've got to do it. But, you know, just as a black woman in the industry, you know, everything that we face, whether it's our parents or, you know, people look at you as less skilled and less talented. I wanted to drive that home, like, no, I'm young, gifted, and black, and show the confidence and being proud of who you are. So I think that's why I chose that sample. It's just something strong. You know, Nina Simone wrote it. She's from North Carolina, so I felt like it was perfect.
And that piano line, I mean, yeah. You know, Aretha's playing the piano, right? And that's iconic, right? You go back to that Pete Rock flip of that piano line on Heavy D's Blue Funk, and you just hear that and you know, right? It's like connected across generations, yeah, of black folks connecting, mm-hmm, to that sound.
Talking today to the rapper Rhapsody, also Mark Anthony Neal and Natalie Bullock Brown on this edition of Back Channel on the state of things. Well, Mark, talk a little bit more about what Rhapsody's talking about here, about bringing forward also and highlighting women in this art. I know you said, you know, we don't have to qualify it, but it is unusual these days. And what kind of a statement is this, do you think this album is making? Where are we, I guess, if we look at the state of the music today?
You know, one of the things that's really interesting, I think, about Rhapsody's success, generally speaking, but particularly with Layla's Wisdom, you know, Layla's Wisdom is released almost the same day that Cardi B's single hits the top of the pop charts, right? And there's this whole conversation about, you know, the first black woman to top the pop chart as a rapper, you know, since Lauryn Hill back in 1998. And, you know, I thought it was ironic that someone who, you know, it's not so easy to attach to hip hop gets identified as hip hop and is now kind of a torchbearer for the tradition. And then you have someone who does not necessarily have that kind of visibility. You know, rap doesn't have a reality show, right? You know, as one example of that, right?
As Cardi B did.
As Cardi B does, right? But yet, you know, unquestionably, when you look at the critical response to Layla's Wisdom, you know, everybody's talking about the fact that this may be one of the best hip hop recordings of the year. Period, right? And again, you don't have to qualify, right, that. It's not the best hip-hop recording from a woman in hip. No, it's just across the board the best hip-hop recording. And I think when we get to the point where we can have that conversation, where it's just about rap skills, mm-hmm, right, and the quality of the production, right, and the wit of the language, when it just gets back to that conversation, I think that means hip-hop is in a good place.
And I think that... you know, Rhapsody, you impress me as someone who has an old soul. So your abilities, your approach to rap, your lyricism in particular, it strikes me as something that is in many ways like ahead of your time, but in the reverse, because it seems like your peers are MC Light and Queen Latifah and, you know, those, not only the female rappers, but just the rap of yesteryear, and that you don't, like, nobody can really touch you. That's among the, like, current crop of young rappers. Certainly Kendrick, certainly Talib Kweli. Like, you're in that league to me. And yep. I wonder how you feel about that.
Wow. I definitely studied, you know, the greats. That's what I grew up on. And, you know, I got into it because I wanted to be one of the best, not the best women, but I just wanted to be the best, you know, one of the best in hip hop. You know, it's hard for me to talk about myself in that regard. Do I think, you know, I've worked enough to be in that conversation? I hope so, and not today, one day. But I just love the culture, and I always said if I'm gonna do it, I wanna do it right. And to do it right, I have to study some of the best that did it. You know, I have to make them, you know, my competition in a good way, mm-hmm. because steel sharpens steel. I can't right. get better if I don't compete and compare myself with the best. So, you know, it's just something I definitely work toward. And, you know, at the end of the day, we have to put that in the hands of the people.
Right. Talking to Rhapsody, Mark Anthony Neal and Natalie Bullock Brown on this edition of Back Channel. Just ahead, we'll continue that conversation and talk more about Rhapsody's new album, Layla's Wisdom. That and much, much more will be taking a knee later in the game on the state of things. North Carolina Public Radio, broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay with us. This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. My guests are popular culture experts Natalie Bullock Brown and Mark Anthony Neal. They join me along with North Carolina rapper Rhapsody for another installment of Back Channel, connecting culture and context. Today, talking about Rhapsody's new album, Layla's Wisdom, and quite a collaboration because you're on Jay-Z's label now, Roc Nation, and of course still working closely with Durham's own, though he now belongs to the world, Ninth Wonder. Talk about the collaboration and that process for putting this record together, Rhapsody.
We partnered with Roc Nation in July of 2015, and we always said if we signed with anyone, it would probably be Jay-Z. It would have to be Jay-Z. And one thing that we liked about Roc Nation is that, you know, they understood the love for the culture and letting artists have creative control. That was very important. Anywhere we went, we never wanted to lose creative control. And, you know, they let us have creative control. You know, they reminded us of ourselves. You know, when we walked in, Jam was really, really tight and we really family oriented. And that's the same energy and feeling we got when we walked in the doors of Roc Nation. So it was a perfect marriage. You know, we came in with the album already complete. And, you know, on the other end, they helped us to get a bigger platform. That was the one thing that we were missing with Jamla, was, you know, hitting different and bigger platforms. And so we just felt like it was the perfect marriage, and it's just really been a dope experience. And Jay-Z's my favorite rapper, so that was probably the biggest plus for me.
Well, tell me about this, because you say you came with the record already done, but you'd recorded dozens of songs and then ended up with 14 tracks on the list. How did you winnow that down?
Oh man, yeah, we recorded about 80 songs for this record. I think, you know, the first time I recorded about 20, and when we got the one, and that one was Nobody, that was the first one that we recorded where we were saying, this is the one we're going to build around. And after that, you know, you do songs and you have, you know, three or four songs that have the same energy, and you have to narrow it down within those songs. But Ninth is a genius at that. You know, if it was up to me, I'd have a 40-track album. So the science of it, to watch him do it, I'm still trying to figure it out. But, you know, we made it work. But, you know, one thing that we did to kind of cheat, you know, to make the track list 14 and not 22 were, you know, the beat switches on the album a lot. So you'll have one song and then there'll be a verse with a different beat, you know, at the end. And so we'd have songs that, like, yo, we really want to put this on. let's cut it in half and put a verse here and a verse here and just make it a real journey. And if you listen to the album, there are no like gaps, or music just doesn't stop playing. It's just like a roller coaster ride of emotion and sounds and feelings and colors.
Kind of like that Duckworth strategy that Matthew used on Kendrick's
album. Right.
And melodic too. I think melody definitely defines this album, a real melodic strain that you can hear in all of the tracks. And I don't know if that's any of the filter that you use, but I mean, let me just play a clip from Sassy, for instance, and we can talk a little bit more about that.
I never know me very well. Lainey, she know me very well. Jabari, I know her very well. I got around guards, no carousel. When it got deep, grew wings and parasail. Read the Bible way more than fairy tales. Saw the wind elevator, took the stairwell. Watch them stairwell, yeah, I'm very well. See these pretty wings, I'm Maxwell. I'm fortunate, I'm the sexiest. I'm a tomboy, you love a tomboy. Check the time, y'all too late, tick, tick. Got no chill, but I do got Netflix. Watch the movies on me. I like my t-shirt with no sleeves. Ain't got a bad arm to show I'm deadly. In a league of my own. Watch what you say, you don't know who you among. Speak a little truth, here come the stones. Throw me a few like I got good bones. Diamonds between my knees, oils in my thighs. Does my sassiness upset you? Or you mad that I survived on the way up? Oh, you mad that I survived and I ain't coming down?
There's a clip from the song Sassy by Rhapsody from her latest album, Layla's Wisdom. We're talking with her today, also Mark Anthony Neal and Natalie Bullock Brown on this edition of Back Channel. Tell us more, rap, about that song, Sassy.
Oh, man, that's a fun record. It's something I think that, you know, fans that have probably been listening to me since day one were a little shocked, like, oh, she stepped out of the box. But, you know, one thing I have been working on a lot is melody. You know, it's something that Ninth has been, you know, teaching me about. And I remember maybe around She Got Game, which was around 2013. I asked for advice from everybody, and me and Kendrick were having a conversation. And, you know, he, again, was telling me about it's all about that melody. So with that one, you know, the beat was different. It was something, you know, people have never really heard me on. I just got in the booth one day and just freestyled it, you know, just found a melody that I thought worked, and it just turned out to be a really dope, fun record.
The song also references a poem by Maya Angelou, right, called Still I Rise?
Yes, definitely. That's one of my favorite poems by her, you know, so... Again, like I just got in the booth and that was just what came to mind, but maybe that was subconscious because I studied a lot of Maya Angelou and Nikki Giovanni. And again, like the name of it was Sassy, and you know, it was just again about being a strong black female. So I got diamonds between my knees, oils in my thighs. Like, you know, that's the power of black women, the hips, you know, how we sway when we walk, the beauty of it. Natalie, no.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, ma'am.
Well, Natalie, and you've had things to say, you know, about other... about other
yes,
rap
ma'am.
Albums, and this is a refreshing turn for you. I mean, is this where the music is headed? Because you've been critical of other music in the past that has been less, you know, has less kind things to say about women in general.
Oh, definitely. I mean, you know, and I wouldn't expect anything less from Rhapsody, honestly. You know, this song to me is like all about black girl magic, you know, and just really celebrating how amazing black women are. But like, it's almost political because in our culture, because of the way that black women tend to be devalued and disrespected, you know, to have someone like Rhapsody repping for us in this way is really powerful. And she's calling out all the things that make us who we are and make us magical.
And it's a counterpoint that a song like Black and Ugly places on that, right?
Yeah.
Where Sassy is this kind of celebration, obviously, the realness of what it means to be a black woman trying to navigate the society we hear Rhapsody talk about in a track like Black and Ugly.
Right.
Well, let's listen to a clip from that track right now.
I remember when y'all used to call me ugly. Isn't it ironic now that y'all just want to love me?
So concerned with my weight, I'm more chunky than I am chubby. Confidence of a porn star, today I cut the horns off. Took all my demons, threw them downhill in a buggy. Then I stood on top the hill and did the Millie Rockin' Dougie. Screaming only God could judge me. I'm feeling like the missile. Now y'all come around and wanna kiss up to me, wish you knew. All masters, grandchildren fantasize about crystals. You can never diss me, I'm more Leo, you more grizzly. Watch your mouth, these country boys carrying tools like Dabney's Bricky. A Tesla, the BMI, Benzo, I ain't picky. Talking appearance ain't no diss to me. No one dissing me. I've been to hell and back and came back up and screaming victory. Still rocking the 333. 9-1 demise, summer feeling like Pete and Peace. And memory of D&D's. He's still rocking, whether it's me rapping or Quentin T. You all about the Benjamins, I'm all about the family. I got the fellas rocking, see, we working on a dynasty. Black and ugly as ever, and still nobody fine as me. No one been as kind as me. Ain't no kinds of me. Told them I'm one of one and told them they one and done.
I'm
fake. Only one kind of me. I'm already better than what you knew. Still trying to be.
Yeah, they call me Black and Ugly.
Black and Ugly by Rhapsody from her latest album, Layla's Wisdom. She's my guest today, along with Mark Anthony Neal and Natalie Bullock Brown on Back Channel. Rap, do you feel like this is songs like this and you know, Sassy, are you pushing back? Is it a way of pushing back against the critique of the sort of misogynistic lyrics that have characterized some rap, or do you not see it as kind of an answer to that?
No, it definitely is. You know, it's just me standing up in the face of it and saying I'm not going to let you create this narrative of what women and beauty look like for us. You know, it's this idea of you got to be skinny and you have to be a certain lighter complexion and have long, you know, straight hair. And, you know, I've you know, seen comments about what that looks like in terms of me. And at the same time, you know, just to think about the history of Black women in America and, you know, how we were raped in slavery. You know, we are these beautiful beings, and how you have people that, you know, pay to have lips like ours and butts like ours, but for us it's told is not beautiful. And so that's me, you know, standing up and being like, no, I'm not gonna let you create this narrative. I'm not gonna let you shake my confidence anymore. I know my beauty, I know my worth, and we know it all comes in different shapes, colors, sizes, textures of hair and all these things. So, you know, that's one of just self-love and owning that and not being defined by American society, not just, you know, what's in hip-hop. Hip-hop is more so a mirror of what's going on around us and in America. And a lot of times people pick what songs to push to the forefront in hip hop to continue to back that narrative up, when that's in right. The culture, that's not what it is. So that's what Black and Ugly and records like Sassy are for me.
You know, when I heard Black and Ugly Rhapsody, I thought, you know, it's really interesting that artists, Black female artists, I would think, no matter the industry, all at some point, it seems to me, are gonna have to like address this issue, right? Like, I'm making a documentary about the exact same thing, and, you know, just kind of clapping back at the anti-Blackness that I experienced when I was younger, and the impact that it had on me, and how I'm trying to embrace, you know, my beauty as an adult and embrace other Black women's beauty and celebrate that. And I mean, would you agree that, like, no matter who you are, whether you're a Beyonce or a Cardi B, like, at some point you're going to have to reckon with this idea of Black women being devalued and thought of as ugly and all those things?
Yeah, definitely. And there are different ways that you can do it. You know, some people will speak up, you know, directly about it. Some will put it in the music. Some will do it in just the image of togetherness and unity. You know, there are different ways that you can do it, but I definitely think, you know, it's a powerful thing when we come together and all address it at the same time together. That's definitely needed. That's what's, you know, that's the bigger picture. That's what's going to push it forward. You do way more together than one single person can do by themselves.
Absolutely.
So I definitely think that's needed.
You know, speaking of the different strategies that Black women use to address these issues, are you getting your Fenty Beauty on?
Really? I haven't tried it yet, but I definitely want to, man. I champion Rihanna.
Let's talk about a line of cosmetics that finally addresses some of the. I don't know what these cosmetics do, but like the base is a thing, right?
And that's the foundation.
The foundation is a thing.
But let me ask you this.
So we'll talk about that more later. But go ahead.
Let me ask you this. As a sidebar to Black and Ugly. You have a mind, Rap, I think, that works like an archivist, right? So that little line in the back about, you know, I got pretty wings like Maxwell.
Yeah.
And then that reference to Dabney's Bricky. And it's like, how many folks do you think know who Dabney's Bricky is? You know, as you're dropping that in.
I don't know. Who's Dabney's Bricky?
That would be Cosby's daughter boyfriend.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, you took it there.
Vanessa's boyfriend.
You went all the way back.
Yeah, I carry tools. Like, because, you know, Dabney's Bricky was the maintenance guy that Vanessa went to.
That's crazy.
Yeah, when I put that line in, I was like, man, nobody's going to get this. but a lot of people... The day it came out, I saw a lot of people like, oh, no, you didn't say that Dabney's Bricky. So, you know, Cosby Show, I think, is on Netflix right now. And if you grew up on it, like everybody, you know, that watched it, for the most part, they got it. And I was really shocked by that. I was like, okay, y'all know. Good.
Remember.
Well, these lines are important. I mean, Natalie, you've even said that Black and Ugly reminds you of the line that actually it was Rhapsody's line in Kendrick Lamar's song Complexion, right?
Yeah, I mean, Rhapsody, you've been doing work around this issue for a minute. Complexion is one of my, I just think it's a classic, you know, chiefly because of your rap in it. I think that there is something about, I mean, even Kendrick goes on and addresses it again in Humble, you know, on Damn. So this is a thread, you know, it's never ending.
It's getting picked up. I want to play a little clip from that Complexion just to give us a sample of what we're talking about.
Let me talk my Stu Scott. Excuse me on my Tupac. Keep your head up, when did you stop? Love and die. Color of your skin, color of your eyes. That's the real blues, baby, like you met Jay's, baby. You blew me away. You think more beauty in blue, green, and gray. On my Solomon up north, 12 years a slave, 12 years of age, thinking my shade too dark. I love myself, I no longer need Q-Putt. Enforcing my dark side like a young George Lucas. Light don't mean you smart, being dark don't make you stupid. A frame of mind for them busters, ain't talking woo-ha. Need a paradox for the paradox, they tutored. Like two tides, LL, you lose two times. If you don't see your beautiful in your complexion, it ain't...
There's just a clip of Rhapsody from the song Complexion from Kendrick Lamar's album To Pimp a Butterfly. Rhapsody's here along with Mark Anthony Neal and Natalie Bullock Brown. This thread that Natalie makes reference to and that we can hear in Rap's music, Mark, as a student of the history of this music, does this speak to the maturity of hip-hop, the embracing a much broader agenda and spectrum?
I think it does. What I've always thought was interesting when you look at working-class musical cultures, right? So there's a way in which country music has functioned in that way for a working-class, poor white community. Hip-hop, the same thing for Black and Latino communities. And what I always admired about country music is that country music told a range of stories. Like, if I can't get gas from my car today, I'm going to write a song about it. And it seemed to be a period of time where hip-hop was limited in the kinds of stories that it was allowed to tell.
That's right.
And now, because the platforms are so different and there's a little bit more independence in the industry, folks can tell a wider range of stories that more so reflect the full humanity of the folks who make hip-hop and the folks who are listening to hip-hop.
We are talking about hip-hop, Rhapsody's new album, and much, much more today on Back Channel Today on this edition of The State of Things. Mark Anthony Neal and Natalie Bullock Brown are with me. Natalie, you're about to say something. Because I had a question about that, and I'm happy to hear from you, but it is a question to you, Rhapsody, about getting these multiple platforms now. You know, we made reference to Cardi B. She makes number one, first time maybe since Lauryn Hill in 98. We don't know, a female rapper. What does it take to get attention these days? And how, you know, sort of what's the difference between simply having great quality music and the effort it takes to get attention, Rap? Maybe you can tell us more about that.
Wow. You know, for some artists, they have a lot of, you know, big power players behind them, whether it's a big label or, you know, it's a bigger brand that has the money to push them and put them in these platforms in these places. You know, on the business side is that, you know, And on another end, just the age we're in with social media and how we share, a lot of music and a lot of artists pop because they become viral, because they are like characters,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Whether it's the, you know, the music that they make is just so left field and outlandish and crazy, you know, people are like, yo, I can't believe that this is, somebody did this, let me show you. And it becomes this viral thing, and a lot of times good music gets lost in the mix, you know, and because there's so much, you know, so that's how I look at it. You know, it's very rare that you're going to see an artist just based off pure talent alone break through without having something to push them to these bigger platforms.
We are running short in time in this segment. I want to play a clip from another song, too, and I appreciate what you just said, and I want to listen to this clip before we close out this segment.
Brought my baby out to play today. Thinking when I saw him arguing, this can't be good. I told her, come on, baby. Now we lying right here dying, and it hurts. I couldn't say, but why they have to shoot my baby, God? Over color, she would color with tomorrow. I know that both forget us when it's time for us to go.
That's a clip from Jesus Coming from Rhapsody's new album, Layla's Wisdom. That is an emotional song with a story, Rhapsody. We got about 10 seconds, but if you can give me just some background on that.
Man, I just wanted to say something to talk about how we're just easily influenced by whether it's peer pressure, about a guy who does an overdose, you know, gang violence and war, you know, people that die for money and gold, things that really don't affect us at the end of the day. And just talk about how short life is and appreciating things more.
Great spectrum. Mark, we've got just a couple more seconds, and I know you had something to say about that track as well, Jesus Coming.
It's the perfect closing track, right? It's a reminder of the realness of our lives, the fragility of our life, and again, the fact that we have an artist here who's willing to take hip-hop there, I think is so critically important.
And Amber Navram's voice is perfect there. Just had to add that.
Natalie Bullock Brown, Mark Anthony Neal, and the rapper Rhapsody. Rhapsody, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much. My favorite show.
Well,
thank you, Rhapsody.
Our favorite rapper and great album. And we are going to be back with Mark and Natalie to talk more about the NFL and much, much more on this latest edition of Back Channel on the State of Things. Do stay with us.
I know I made mistakes, trying to break quiet. I gave away my peace, but I don't know where to find it.
This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio, talking with popular culture experts Natalie Bullock Brown and Mark Anthony Neal on another installment of Back Channel, connecting culture and context. Now we will look at the Take a Knee protest in the NFL. Players continue to either sit or kneel during the national anthem before football games. On Tuesday, the NFL met with players to talk about the protest and decided that it will not penalize players for kneeling during the national anthem. But yesterday, NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell said this.
We believe that our players should stand for the national anthem. That's an important part of our game and our moments, and we believe in that. I think we also have to keep focus on this. We have about 6 or 7 players that are involved with this protest at this point. And this is something that what we try to do is deal with the underlying issue and understand what it is that they're protesting and try to address that matter.
All right, there he is, NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell at a press conference yesterday. Natalie Bullock Brown and Mark Anthony Neal here on Back Channel to talk about that. What do you make of this, Natalie?
I think that hopefully I'm believing that Goodell and the owners are understanding that more than 70% of their players are black and brown folk. And so they need to pay attention to the issues that are at the heart of the protest. I think what has been lost, besides the fact that Colin Kaepernick started protesting about police brutality, it had nothing to do with the flag or the anthem. But that was a way to bring attention to that issue. But, you know, he consulted with a Marine, right? I mean, when he first began to protest, Cap sat during the anthem. He didn't kneel. And that enraged a Marine who wrote to him. They had a conversation. And he suggested, the Marine did, that Cap kneel instead of sitting Which, you know, I would figure, I mean, with all of the consternation over your disrespecting the military and you know, the flag and our country, that if a Marine said it's okay to kneel, then maybe it's okay to kneel. And it is not about disrespect. It is actually about finding a way to bring attention to an issue, but still be respectful. And I think people have forgotten that or don't know that. And I think that's something that we need to keep in mind.
I think sometimes we have to separate how fans are reacting to this. You know, when we think about the quality of public schooling in this country and what folks know about civics, that part of it plays out the way it should. I think it's much more complicated with the owners, because I think in the context of the owners, it is so much bigger than football. I don't think we ever take into account what kind of economic impact football has, you know, for those 20 weeks from September to February, in terms of what kinds of ways professional football touched a large society, whether we're talking about Buffalo Wild Wings or fantasy football and a range of other things. And these owners are afraid of the economic impact in that regard. And then when you think about in the backdrop of this, Colin Kaepernick is now, you know, charging NFL owners with collusion. And their folks have been saying, well, his career is going to be over with because of this, and his career is going to be over with anyway, right? That's what we're looking at. But I can't, I don't imagine it. I imagine in some context, it would be very easy for these owners to come together and come up with a package to pay Colin Kaepernick, you know, to take this out of the courts. That's always going to be so much more cheaper than having to deal with the fact that fans might disappear from the sport. And I mean, it's just very real in that regard. And even the debate between the owners and President Trump ultimately comes down to a conversation about the fact that we know how to treat our Negroes the way that we treat them, right? You don't come from your plantation to tell me how to run the quote-unquote Negroes on my plantation and vice versa. So even when the owners push back against the president, it's even a conversation in that context about how do we better exploit, or we exploit our ball players in a better way, right, than you are critiquing them because of their politics. Right.
Well, you have all of that complexity, the fact that maybe 70% of the players are black or brown, but the fans aren't, and they're the ones who are protesting, and as Mark says, threaten some real economic damage, which the owners have to take into account. But Mark and Natalie, there's a whole other question involved here, which is, why did the NFL side with the players on this? And a lot has to do with the fact that they were going to lose in court. The fact is that you cannot tell your employers which flag to salute and when. It violates the First Amendment of the Constitution. And they knew that they were going to lose in court. So this is interesting, Mark, in the sense that for the first time in a long time, we have a social justice issue and a labor issue. Mm-hmm. And that's essentially what this came down to, a labor management crisis in which labor management said, we're losing court, for the first time actually siding with labor and social justice in the same court.
In 2017 America, where for most Americans the AFL is a defunct football league and not a labor and not, not a labor union, right? I mean, that's just the reality of it,
right?
You know, the NFLPA is one of the most visible labor unions in the country, right? When folks think about labor unions now, they don't actually think about labor unions. They think about professional sports leagues. And I think the NFL is in an interesting position, NFLPA is, because it's really the closest thing to a working class labor union, right? The players don't have guaranteed contracts, right? Whatever they step out, they're stepping out knowing that there's an incredible risk to their ability to make money in ways that NBA players and baseball players and even hockey players have certain kind of protections that NFL players don't. So when you talk about this connection of a social justice and labor movement, it's not surprising that it's coming from the NFLPA. And then you go into the fact that 70% of the players are black, you know, it really does cut close to home in that regard.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, another part of the complexity that I've been thinking a lot about is the fact that, you know, traditionally in our culture, it's the athletes, the entertainers, the media that depicts African Americans as maids and butlers, and like that's acceptable. That's an acceptable space for Black people to operate within. And so when those Negroes become uppity within those spaces, that's when we have a problem. So this is about containment, as much as it's about these other things, labor and capitalism and so forth.
Well, and you wonder also to what extent Donald Trump's intervention here has raised this to a different level. Obviously, fans would have been, owners would have been hearing from fans, but then you've got the Trump factor. Let's listen.
So what about police involved shootings as it relates to the NFL? That is what the players are saying is the crux of why they're taking a knee, sir. The police involved shooting issue.
It is very disrespectful to our country when they take a knee during our national anthem. It is very disrespectful. Just hear it, hear it. It is very disrespectful to our country when they take a knee during the national anthem, number one. Number two, the people of our country are very angry at the NFL. All you have to do is look at their ratings and look at their stadiums. You see empty seats where you never saw them before. A lot of people are very angry at it. It is highly disrespectful. They shouldn't do it. Thank you very much, everybody.
Yeah, there we go. Donald Trump. April Ryan was asking the questions there. The intervention of Donald Trump, what effect has that had?
There are a lot of reasons to refer to the president as brilliant, but he is brilliant in ways that he can take issues and reflect them back to his base.
Exactly.
Right? And this becomes, this was a way for him to reconnect with his base as they're asking questions about health care reform and all these kinds of things. So he was brilliant in that regard. But again, he's not interested in the end result of this, right? He's interested in getting his base up in arms around this. And again, the NFL is such an easy target, right? When he talks about like the ratings going down, part of that is because the product on the field just isn't as good. Right. Thursday night football is a horrible product. Right. There's lots of reasons for that. And the protests become yet another contribution to the erosion of the quality of the product,
as well as the boycotts. I mean, there is actually a boycott that I'm not clear on how many people are participating, but there absolutely was a call for people to stop watching, like don't support the NFL during this season in support of Colin Kaepernick, the protests, but also CTE and the ways that the NFL will allow murderers and
domestic
people,
violence, right?
Yeah,
Well, that's it. The call was coming now from the right. It was coming from the left, and now the right is saying we don't want to watch it either. And it's kind of hard. It's really thrown. And you also have, again, if you talk about this as a labor issue, only in America could we have a populist president who's a billionaire representing underemployed people from Ohio and multimillionaire labor union workers being the spokesman for the working man.
Yeah, it is an interesting moment.
The First Amendment is also part of this, and I want to talk about ESPN anchor Jemele Hill, who's coming to the end of her two-week suspension. She, of course, the co-host of a show, SportsCenter 6, known as The Six. She was suspended for violating the social media policy, where she kind of weighed in on this controversy. Mark, what's your take on that?
I think Natalie hit the nail on the head a few minutes ago when she talked about this idea of the uppity Negro. Particularly in sports journalism, we expect for opinions to be siloed, right? So if you're going to be a woman who's a sports journalist, we only want you to talk about sports, right? And quite frankly, we only want you to talk about women in sports. When you begin to have a broader opinion, that's a problem. And then to bring politics in that. And then as a Black woman who's bringing politics in that, right? This was a particular smackdown. What I think is interesting about this dynamic that doesn't get talked about enough, because we always talk about the ESPN piece. What we forget is that ESPN is owned by Disney. Right. And Disney has a larger brand that it's also concerned about. When Jemele Hill becomes in part the face of ESPN, she then, impacts on how Disney is being impacted. And so when I talk to someone at the network, they're like, no, this is probably something that this call in particular probably came from Disney as opposed to ESPN.
Mm. And, that's really interesting for a variety of reasons, because I'm thinking about the princesses and how Jamel, you know, as beautiful as she is, she does not fit that image, right? She's not a Carrie Champion. She's not a, you know, the other sort of eye candy that's on ESPN. There's a lot of substance to Jamel. Clearly, we see that through her willingness to, you know, to sacrifice, to be outspoken. And I think that, you know, the reaction to her, the response to her, besides this sort of brand concern, also speaks to, again, this racial undercurrent. And she essentially is the angry black woman. She's the sapphire in this scenario. And again, she needs to be contained. She cannot be saying all these things and causing mayhem, you know, and calling for boycotts. That's unacceptable. You know, and so there's always this racial tinge that has to be addressed as well.
And she addressed it as well, the idea of sports and politics, Jemele Hill talking on The Root last month.
This idea that sports has always been devoid of politics is a lie. The same person that will tell me to stick to sports will also say Muhammad Ali was a great sports figure. What's the difference? The difference is now you know Muhammad Ali is right. So when we're talking about Colin Kaepernick, because you don't believe in the issue or you don't have as much investment in it, it's easy to rail against him now. But ask yourself, what are you going to be saying 20 years from now when you look back on what you said now? Because now is the courageous moment to have an opinion about it, that the people who want us to, quote unquote, stick to sports, even though we are, they more often than not, they want us to stick to not talking about things that they disagree with.
ESPN anchor Jemele Hill on The Root last month. I'm talking with Mark Anthony Neal and Natalie Bullock Brown on Back Channel on this edition of The State of Things. Well, so at a double standard, and it's interesting to know, I mean, to some extent, the network may win on this anyway because they've taken action and now it brings attention. I don't know, Mark, what the business side of this is. Yeah. But
I mean, when we talk about this idea that sports isn't political, right? You know, the Russian government stayed home from the 1980 Olympics because of politics. Yeah. I mean, the U.S. stayed away from the 1980 Winter Olympics. The Russians stayed away from the 1984 Summer Olympics because of politics. This week, we just celebrated the 49th anniversary of Tommy Smith and John Carlos and the Black Power Fist, right? And they're celebrated as patriots.
Not to mention the Berlin Olympics in the 1930s.
But yeah.
Yeah, all of that. Well, I want to switch gears here quickly because we made reference to this earlier in the program, and this is pop star Rihanna has put out a new makeup line called Fenty Beauty, and I said, I'm going to be talking about cosmetics on the show, and they said, oh, yes, this is a very important issue. Tell me why, Natalie.
Well, not that there have not been other black women or black people to come out with cosmetics lines for black women, but Rihanna is the first that I can tell who has actually taken the time to really understand the science of black women's skin, and not just the shades of skin, but the undertones, which is so important when you're using foundation. I know y'all don't understand that.
I'm learning.
But, you know, foundation, you can look like really crazy if you have the wrong color on. And Rihanna has, I think, 45 shades of foundation. Okay. That means that she runs the spectrum of colors. And that's really important. I mean, if you listen to beauty vloggers on YouTube who have tried out their particular shade, I'm talking about from really, really pale white women to really, really dark black women, they all rave because their skin looks natural with Rihanna's cosmetics. And so this is huge because black women spend so much money trying to find the right products for their face. I mean, I think it's to the tune of $75 billion a year. And so this is huge.
It is, but the real puzzle for me is when I got into all of this and realized all that, how the shareholders missed all this for so long.
Well, I don't think the Estee Lauders and the Cliniques and all these other sort of mainstream beauty companies have really had an interest in the consumer. They've been interested in the money. So they will offer, you know, it's like throwing a dog a bone. We'll give you a couple of dark shades and you can play around with those. But we're not going to invest in trying to really understand your skin because we care about you as a person, as a consumer. And Rihanna is saying, I want every woman to be able to go into to Sephora or wherever you're going to purchase my cosmetics and say, and not have to say, oh, that looks really good on her, but it probably wouldn't look good on me.
And I think it also forces the Black community into a conversation again about gender, right? Thinking about the Kendrick song Humble in this context, you know, there are a lot of Black men who will say, well, I prefer my women to go natural. And you know, and as if, you know, women aren't trying to navigate a whole range of emotions in terms of their skin care, in terms of their skin color. And it's not just about their relationship to whatever men are in their life, but when they're going into corporate boardrooms, when they're the classroom, when they're just walking in public and trying to represent themselves, there's so much more on the table that most men never have any fundamental understanding of.
I wish we had more time. Mark Anthony Neal, Natalie Bullock Brown, Mark, Chairman of the Department of African and African American Studies at Duke, Natalie Bullock Brown, Professor of Film and Broadcast Media at St. Augustine University. Another edition of Back Channel has gone past. Thank you so much for being on the program.
Thanks,
Frank.
And thank you for listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.